Gina took a breath, then said, "I don't care." The words sounded like exhalations. "You do care, Gina. You want me to stop."
"I don't, really. Alice, I think I need help."
"Okay," Alice said. She was starting to tire now, too, and began to swim in a crawl, her arms struggling to get out of the water, so she switched to the breaststroke. There was a definite pull in the water, a current tugging her away from the shore. Panic coursed through her, squeezing her chest, but she took a breath and told herself to swim parallel to the shore for a while, till she was out of the current.
"Alice, help!"
Gina shouted, and Alice turned to see her wave a hand above the water, her head submerging, then coming up again. She was drowning, her words sputtering. Alice felt a burst of strength and began to swim north, toward the lighthouse on the bluff, stopping occasionally until she no longer felt the pull of the current. Then she turned toward shore, her lungs burning, her arms as weak as jelly, and began to breaststroke home. After what felt like an eternity, the water began to swell again, and suddenly she was being pushed forward by a curling wave, her chest and thighs scraping the rock-strewn shore. She crawled forward and collapsed, her body shivering, her lungs pumping. When her breathing returned to normal, she stood, stumbling a little, then worked her way along the shore, making sure to walk near the waterline and not where the sand was dry. She didn't want to leave footprints. The moon came out again, and she was able to find the two small piles of clothing, Gina's and hers, up near the rocks. She pulled her pajama bottoms and t-shirt back on over her damp, sandy skin. She was now shaking uncontrollably, her teeth starting to chatter. A car went by on Micmac Road. She crouched under the sweep of its headlights, seeing Gina's clothes briefly illuminated. The tide was going out now, but the sand was smooth and wet right up to where her sandals lay. There were no footprints visible. Despite how cold she was, Alice crouched and watched the ocean for as long as she could, scanning its surface when the moon was out from under cloud cover. She knew that Gina had drowned. She must have gone under right after Alice had swum away from her. But still she watched, just to make sure. She tried to feel her way across the water, to sense Gina still struggling to stay alive. But there was nothing. The ocean had swallowed her. Alice took the cement steps back up to the road, crossed it, and jogged toward home. She pushed the door open, glad she'd remembered to leave it unlocked, and stepped into the quiet interior, lights still on in the kitchen and the living room. She turned them off and went upstairs. Passing through the bedroom, she could hear the rhythmic staccato breathing of Jake that meant he was in a deep sleep. She undressed, bundling her clothes together and pushing them toward the bottom of the laundry basket, then got under the hot pulse of the shower, letting the water warm her up, soothe her muscles, and wash away the sand that ran off her body in dark rivulets. She shampooed and conditioned her hair, and soaped herself completely with Jake's Irish Spring twice. She stopped shivering, and the taste of salt in her mouth went away, but she turned the water off and stepped out of the shower only when her legs felt like they could no longer support her. In a fresh set of pajamas, she got under the covers quietly and lay on her back, and told herself she needed to make some decisions. When the police came to question her, and they would come, she'd tell them that Gina had come to her door, and that Alice had told her she was too tired to talk, and that Gina was very drunk and maybe on drugs. She'd wanted to go swimming, but Alice refused, and so she left. They couldn't prove otherwise, not after Alice laundered the pajamas and took another shower to make sure there was no other evidence. She could do that early in the morning, before Jake woke. How soon would the police come? How soon would Gina be missed? She closed her eyes, and she was back in the cold, deep water, Gina asking for help. Alice told herself there was no way she would have been able to save her, even if she'd wanted to. She'd barely saved herself from the tide. And Gina was incapacitated. She'd gotten what she wanted, all the beautiful lies about fame and money and the world telling her how special she was, and it had clearly been killing her. And maybe because her own life was such a shit show, she'd decided to mess with Alice's life, to pass judgment because Alice had actually found someone to love who loved her back. No, she couldn't have saved Gina even if she'd wanted to. She'd be dead now too if she'd tried to save them both. Gina would have dragged them both under the water. There was nothing Alice could have done. Satisfied with these thoughts, Alice turned over onto her stomach and fell happily asleep. Chapter 16. Now. Harry slept late again the following day, coming down to find a note from Alice saying she had gone out to do errands and wouldn't be back till noon. Harry suddenly relished the idea of some time alone in the house, some time to think some more about what had happened to his father and his strange date the evening before with Grace. He called John at the store and let him know that he wasn't feeling great, and could he just come in during the afternoon.
"You don't have to come in at all, Harry," John said. "I can handle things here." "Okay, but I'd like to come in. If I feel better, I'll drop by, and if I don't feel better, I guess you won't see me." "Okay. Take care, son."
There was half a pot of lukewarm coffee left, and Harry poured himself a mug, adding milk, then heating it up in the microwave. He brought the coffee back up to his room and logged onto his laptop. He was hoping to find out something more about Grace. He knew she had lied about her relationship with his father. Were they having an affair? And if so, was that why she had come to Maine from New York? For the funeral? Then why was she sticking around? He realized he didn't know her last name, so he Googled Grace and everything she'd mentioned to him the night before. Ann Arbor, Michigan. New York University. He even tried Ackerson's Rare Books. Nothing came up, and it made him realize how little he'd learned about her. On a whim, he decided to call the Ackersons in New York and see if Ron Krakowski was there. He got the number from their website and called on his cell phone. "Ackerson's Rare Books?" It was a female voice.
"Is Ron available?"
"Let me check. Can I ask who's calling?" Harry gave his name, knowing that Ron, phobic sometimes about talking on the telephone, would take the call. A half minute passed before Ron's voice said,
"Jesus, Harry, I can't fucking believe it."
"I know,"
Harry said, suddenly happy to hear Ron's voice. He was a prickly presence, but a constant one. Harry had known him his whole life.
"I left a message for Alice, but I haven't heard back. You in Maine now?" "Of course you are. What are they saying? He just slipped and fell and died, just like that?"
"Actually, no. Now they're saying that maybe he was hit first. That's what killed him."
"Like someone killed him? Jesus H. Christ, how do they know all this? Maine CSI, I guess, right? They know who did it?"
Harry told him they didn't, and that the police had been by to ask him if he knew anyone who might have had a grudge against his father.
"You told them no, I hope. I like to say that your father had few friends but no enemies. I would have said that at the funeral if I'd...
"Don't worry about it. I understand. It was a long way to come."
"Yeah. Older I get, anything farther than 10 blocks seems a long way to go."
Ron was no older than 60 years old, Harry thought, but let it go. They talked some more, about Alice and about what might happen to the store up in Maine. Then Harry said,
"I've got a strange question, Ron. Do you know someone named Grace? I don't know her last name, but she knew my dad, and she said she met him down in New York at your
Irish girl with pretty eyes. Her last name's McGowan. You know the apartment on 3rd that Jim Mills sold me for $1,000 in 1978? She's renting that from me."
"Still?"
"Far as I know. She's paid up on rent.
She's a nice girl, helped us clear books from the basement when Sandy hit. She did know your dad, because he was down here then as well.
Were they close?
Were they close? Who? Your father and Grace? I didn't particularly think so, but it's not like I was paying attention. Why? Did she say they were?
No, no. It's just that she came to the funeral.
No shit. That is a little strange.
You think they were having an affair?
The line was silent for half a second, and Harry could almost hear Ron's shrug.
I would say no, but what do I know? Your father and I didn't talk about that stuff.
But do you think it's a possibility?
Harry, I don't know. Your father seemed like a happy man, but he did come down to New York a lot. She's a pretty girl, Grace, but she's no Alice, I'd say.
Harry wondered for a moment if Ron had ever met Alice, then remembered the time that she'd come down to New York to visit.
Thanks, Ron, Harry said.
You need money, Harry?
No, I'm fine. But I might need some help dealing with this store.
Call me anytime, okay? Let me give you my home number, too.
After writing it down, not surprised that Ron didn't have a cell phone, Harry asked if Ron knew how to spell Grace's last name. He wrote that down as well. After ending the call, he Googled Grace McGowan. There were quite a few, but none that seemed to match the person he was looking for. There were still people, even young people, who didn't have online profiles. He was one of them. Alice was another. His father didn't have much of one, but he had been profiled years earlier in a New York Times article about selling books in the age of the Internet. He looked him up now, reread the article, and studied the accompanying picture of his father, looking distinguished and handsome in front of a cluttered shelf of books. Like a young Ted Hughes, all strong chin and thick hair. He killed the screen, not wanting to look anymore, but he kept thinking of his father. Would he have had an affair with a much younger woman in New York? Maybe Harry was biased, but he would have said no if his mother had never died. But maybe his relationship with Alice had soured, or maybe Grace had thrown herself at his father and he'd simply been unable to resist. And if he had had an affair, what if Alice had found out about it? How would she react? Would she have followed him on his afternoon walk, waited for him to reach a secluded spot, and hit him with something? It seemed ridiculous, but someone had killed him. Why not Alice? Or for that matter, why not Grace McGowan? Maybe his father had broken off the affair and she'd followed him to Maine to get her revenge? Harry wondered if there might be some answers to these questions in the house. If Alice had suspected Bill of cheating, she might have hired a private detective to follow him in New York. And if so, there might be some record of it. Gray Lady was a big house. Before Bill bought it, it had been a bed and breakfast, started by a couple that got lonely when their six children all left home. On the second floor alone, there were 5 bedrooms and 3 bathrooms. The first floor had been renovated at some point so that the modernized kitchen flowed into the dining room, and French doors led into the large front living room with its bay windows. At the back of the house was a wide sunroom, clearly an addition, with views of the barn and down toward the marsh. The 2 other major rooms on the first floor were Bill's office and Alice's office. Bill's looked more like a storage area than a functioning room. The walls were lined with bookshelves, all filled, and stacks of books covered the floor, creating a strange cityscape in miniature. Bill had left a narrow path through the books that led to the only furniture in the room, a large oak desk, and a faded leather swivel chair that Bill had owned since college. The other office was all Alice, a sunny corner room dominated by a craft table with a sewing machine and stacks of fabric. But there was also a desk in the room, ridiculously neat compared to Bill's, and that was where Harry decided to look first. The desk, painted a robin's egg blue, was practically child-sized compared to the monstrosity in Bill's office. On top of it was Alice's laptop computer, closed and cool to the touch. She had a short stack of mail that hadn't been opened. Harry riffled through the envelopes, nothing immediately catching his eye. There were credit card applications, what looked like a bill from Macy's, an alumni letter addressed to William Ackerson from Columbia University. Harry pulled open the only drawer. He expected it to be as neat and organized as the desk, but inside was a jumbled mess of papers, photographs, a half-filled perfume bottle, a box of thank-you cards. The house made one of its sounds, a wall settling somewhere, and Harry jumped. What would happen if Alice returned home early and found him looking through her things? He cocked his head and listened. The house was quiet again. He told himself that he'd just quickly look through the items in the desk, see if there was a letter from a private investigator, anything that would suggest she had information about his father's affair. Harry sat down on the chair, painted the same color as the desk. He carefully slid the drawer all the way out. Most of what he found was paid bills, bank statements, an insurance policy for the station wagon. There were no letters from a private investigator. He did find an expired passport that had been issued when Alice was just 19 years old. He'd never seen a picture of his stepmother when she'd been young. She was makeup-free, her skin as pale as it was now, but her eyes seemed even larger in her face a little bit rounder. She was beautiful, and Harry wondered what she'd been like as a teenager. It was somehow impossible to imagine her any different than she was now. He stared at the picture for a long time, and she seemed to stare back, telling him nothing. He flipped through the passport to see where she'd been, and a photograph fell out. It was a picture of a young Alice standing with a man Harry didn't recognize on a cobblestone street, a stone building behind them with the word funiculaire in metal letters on its side. Both Alice and the man were wearing long, heavy coats. The photographer had focused more on the building behind them, the rail tracks leading up a steep slope, and less on Alice and the man, both a little blurry. Even so, it was clear that the man was quite a bit older than Alice. His arm was draped possessively over Alice's slim shoulders. Her father, probably. Harry tried to remember if he knew anything about Alice's family, but all he could recall was his own father telling him that Alice's parents were dead, and that she wasn't close to anyone in her extended family. Bill hadn't talked too much about Alice, except for the time he said she reminded him of Maine. For some reason, that description had stuck. Harry heard a noise coming from the front of the house. He quickly returned the passport to where he'd found it, shoved the drawer shut, and went to look. The mailman had pushed the mail through the front door's slot. Harry picked up an envelope from a bank and a Nordstrom catalog and brought them to the kitchen counter. He considered a second cup of coffee, but decided he was already jumpy enough. He drank a glass of orange juice instead, flipping through the catalog, barely seeing the pictures. Then he checked his phone. Nothing from Grace, not that he was expecting something. He didn't go back to Alice's office, going instead to his father's and sitting at the desk on the leather chair. He stared at the framed print on the wall, an original signed illustration by Robert E. McGinnis of a girl in a short white dress sitting on top of a roulette table. It had been done for a book cover, Harry knew, but he couldn't remember which one. Something from the 1960s. Harry swiveled in the chair, looking at all his father's books, wondering what would become of them now. He began to think about all the words his father had read, all the plots he'd absorbed, and how they were all gone, but then he stopped himself. Instead, he picked through a stack of books on the desk. At the top was one of his father's moleskin notebooks. He'd always had one going, filling at least two notebooks a year. In a sense, they were his diaries, but instead of filling them with activities and day-to-day recollections, they were filled with lists of books he was trying to acquire, and lists of books he already had. There was also page after page of favorite quotes, plus his current ever-changing lists of top tens. 10 best Signet paperback covers, 10 best standalone Christies, 10 best crime novels published before 1945. Harry had flipped through his father's notebooks before. There was never anything personal, not even a shopping list. But in a way, it was as personal as a diary. It mapped his interior world. Harry flipped to the last entry, which came midway through the notebook. It was a quote, centered on the page. "It's not dark yet, but it's getting there." As was sometimes the case with quotes his father wrote down, it wasn't attributed to anyone, probably because his father knew who said it and these books were only for his father. Harry read the words several times, haunted by them. Maybe it was just some line from a song that his father liked, but it also sounded like a premonition of death. Harry punched the line into his smartphone and got an instant hit. It was from a song by Bob Dylan called "Not Dark Yet." He wasn't surprised. Dylan was his father's favorite musician. There wasn't even a distant second, except maybe Frank Sinatra. Bill had spent as much time obsessing over Dylan's lyrics as he did actually listening to his music. His notebooks were filled with Dylan quotes, and sometimes he'd transcribe entire songs. Still, Harry stared at this particular line from Dylan for another minute. It was the last thing his father had ever written. Then Harry flipped back a page. There was another quote, this one with an attribution. "That's the worst thing about democracy. There have to be two opinions about every issue." Ross MacDonald, Black Money. And before that quote was one of his father's lists. This one was titled, "A Revised List of Ross MacDonald's Lou Archer Novels, Ranked in Order of Preference." He didn't hear the front door open, but Alice's voice was suddenly in the house. "Anybody home?" Harry startled, then stood up, putting the notebook down and stepping out into the hallway. Alice was there, between Detective Dixon, wearing what looked like the same tan suit he'd had on the first time Harry had met him, and another man, much shorter, in a dark suit. Strange scenarios were passing through Harry's mind. Was Alice being arrested? Was there more bad news? But then Detective Dixon, in a calm voice, said,
"Hello, Harry. Alice came by the station this morning, and I thought I'd bring her home. She's a little upset. Is everything okay?"
Alice turned and entered the living room. Detective Dixon stepped forward.
"Harry, this is my colleague, Detective Vogel."
Harry nodded in the other detective's direction. He had a wide face and thick, dark eyebrows that almost touched above the bridge of a squat nose.
"What's going on?" Harry asked. "Sam, why don't you sit with Mrs. Ackerson a moment while I talk with Harry?"
Detective Vogel nodded and followed Alice into the living room while Dixon grasped Harry's shoulder in one of his big hands and said in a lowered voice,
"Alice came to the station today with some new information. She said your father was involved with a young woman here in town. Do you know anything about that?"
"What do you mean, involved?"
Harry asked.
"Does the name Annie Callahan mean anything to you?"
Harry, completely expecting the detective to say Grace's name, said nothing for a moment.
"You knew her?"
the detective asked.
"No, sorry. I didn't. I don't."
"Who is she?"
"Are you sure? She worked briefly at your father's bookstore."
"Up here? In Maine?"
"Uh-huh." "No, I didn't know her." "What about the name Lou Callahan? Ever heard that name?"
Harry shook his head.
"Okay, thanks. That's all I needed to know. Your stepmother told us today that your father had been involved, romantically, with an employee at the store. That's Annie Callahan. She thinks either she or her husband might have had something to do with your father's death."
"Why is she just telling you this now?"
"Partly because of you, Harry. That's what she said, that she wanted to protect you from finding out that information.
She's pretty upset.
Just as Detective Dixon was saying those words, the other detective, Harry had already forgotten his name, reappeared in the doorway to the living room and said,
"She's asking to see Harry. You all set here?"
"We're all set,"
the detective said, placing his hand on Harry's shoulder and leading him toward Alice. Chapter 17. Now. In the living room, Alice was on the couch, her knees up tight to her chest. Her head was angled down, her eyes squeezed shut, and she was emitting low, eerie groans. Her wet cheeks made it clear that she'd been crying. Harry was paralyzed with inaction for one brief moment, then slid next to her and placed an arm over her shoulders. She instantly adjusted herself, moving closer to him, pressing her damp face against his shirt. He could hear and feel the ragged breath entering and exiting her body. Both detectives stayed standing, but Detective Dixon said,
"Alice, I'm going to go talk with this Annie Callahan, okay? And then maybe her husband."
Harry didn't think she was going to react, but then she shifted her body, turning to face the detective, wiping at her face. There was a damp spot on Harry's shirt where her face had been. The detective pulled at his suit pants above the knees and crouched.
"You going to be okay here with Harry?"
he asked. Alice slid her legs off the couch and put her feet back on the floor. She nodded her head while drawing a wet breath in through her nostrils. Harry kept one hand on her back, nervous about moving it. She was wearing a wraparound dress, and the front had slid open a little, so that Harry had a brief view of one of her breasts barely covered by the white cup of a bra. She shifted again, fixing the dress, and Harry moved his hand.
"I don't know if..."
"You don't know if what, Mrs. Ackerson?"
"I don't know for a fact if Annie, or if her husband... had anything to do with what happened to my husband."
"No, of course not. But it's information we should have. We'll check it out."
He stood and nodded toward his partner. Harry took the opportunity to get off the sofa and walk them to the door.
"We'll let you know if we find anything out. In the meantime, if Alice mentions anything that she didn't mention to us, then... you have my card?"
"I do,"
Harry said. After they left, Harry returned to Alice, who was now standing, smoothing out her dress in the middle of the living room. Her face was dry.
"You okay?"
Harry asked. Alice didn't answer the question, but said,
"It's this woman's husband. I know it is."
"Who? This Annie Callahan?"
"I was hoping you'd never have to hear that name, Harry. I'm sorry. It wasn't your father's fault. It was all her. She went after him. She saw his store, and she saw this house,
and..." "Tell me what happened between them,"
Harry interrupted. She hitched her shoulders back.
"Is it too early for a drink, you think?"
Alice went to the sunroom while Harry made drinks, a glass of rosé for Alice and a beer for him. He was really only drinking the beer so Alice didn't have to be alone, but was also happy to be drinking it. He was rattled by the new information. Once they were settled, Alice on the love seat and Harry in one of the rocking chairs, Alice said,
"We hired Annie as a huge favor. Her husband, Lou, was a fisherman. Is a fisherman. And, you know, with the cod restrictions, he'd been out of work for 6 months. Your father heard about it and offered Annie a job. It was last fall when there'd been extra work."
"I didn't know about that."
"Your father was back from a scouting trip with too many books, of course, so he offered Annie a job. Just to help out with cataloging, but at $20 an hour.
She shook her head, more of a tremor at the memory.
"And then, before you knew it, she's coming around here to help Bill with the books in his office." I knew something..."
"How old is she?"
Harry asked.
"Annie? She looks a lot older than she is. I don't know, somewhere in her 30s.
"And they were definitely involved?"
She tipped her glass back and almost finished her wine. Harry watched her throat muscles swallowing. Oh, they were, for sure, Harry. I'm sorry you have to hear this. I was hoping you wouldn't, because I know how you felt about your father, how much you admired him. But it was very clear that something was going on, and I had to force him to get rid of her. And then, when the detective told me that your father's death was not an accident, I just knew. I didn't say anything right away because of you, Harry, but then I decided I had to tell them. Harry wanted to ask Alice for more specifics. Had she caught them together? Did his father confess to her that they were involved? He didn't know why he was skeptical, especially considering the possibility that his father had also been having an affair down in New York City, but he did wonder if Alice was overreacting.
So she was fired?
She was let go, let's just say that, and that's when her husband finally figured it out. John told me that he came to the store, threatened Bill, told him that if he ever came near Annie again, he'd kill him with his bare hands, something like that.
John told you this, or my father did?
John was the one who told me, because he was worried. I asked Bill about it, and he said it was no big deal, just a frustrated man blowing off steam. Your father could be... he could be too charitable, at times.
So, you think that Lou...
I didn't think your father had anything more to do with Annie, but who knows? He was always gone lately, and maybe he was meeting her somewhere else. I don't know. Stupid man. She looked at her glass, rolling the tiny amount of wine that was left up one of the sides.
Can I get you some more?
Okay, she said, holding out the glass for Harry to take. When he returned with the wine, Alice had curled up in the fetal position on the love seat. Harry gingerly placed her glass on the glass-topped coffee table, as she said, in a fuzzy voice, "Thank you, Harry. I might just take a little nap."
"You should."
"Don't leave me, okay?"
"Okay,"
Harry said, not knowing exactly what she meant.
"I'll be here if you need me."
He quietly left the living room, went up to his bedroom, opened up his laptop, and did a search for Annie Callahan or Lou Callahan, but couldn't find anything. Then he texted Grace, asking if they could meet and talk sometime soon. He needed to get the whole story from her, why she had come to Maine. It was clear that she'd had some sort of significant relationship with his father, and the police would need to know about that as well. Waiting for a response, Harry paced his small bedroom. He stopped and looked at the packed bookcase, all filled with his father's detective stories. Bill Ackerson would never know that he wound up as a corpse in his own mystery story. Harry almost smiled at the thought. He thought back to the previous Christmas, his father giving him, as he always did, a check, plus one single book, usually his father's favorite book of that past year. This year it had been A Kiss Before Dying by Ira Levin.
"I missed this somehow on the first go-round. It's brilliant." "Thanks, Dad," Harry had said.
Later that same night, Alice in bed, Harry had started the book while his father finished reading the latest Ruth Rendell.
"Why do you think you like mysteries so much?" Harry asked. "I'm deeply skeptical of any book that doesn't begin with a corpse."
Harry had heard his father say these exact words, or something close to them, many times.
"No, really. Why?"
His father frowned, thinking.
"It's my religion, I guess, since I don't have a real religion. The world is chaos, and then a detective comes along and restores order. Or he doesn't, and that's really my favorite kind of mystery story."
Harry had finished A Kiss Before Dying by the time he returned to school that year. It turned out to be one of those books in which order is restored, but not before a lot of damage had been done. Harry liked the book, but it had left him feeling empty and sad. Instead of bringing it back with him to Mather, he'd left it in the bookshelf in his room. He pulled it out now, looked at his father's inscription. To Harry with love from Dad. He quickly closed the book and put it back on the shelf. A few months earlier, Harry thought he knew his father inside and out. Now he realized he didn't know him at all. His phone buzzed, a text coming through.
Come by tonight anytime. Just ring the front doorbell and I'll come let you in.
Harry wrote back,
okay.
Then went back downstairs to check on Alice. She was still in the sunroom, still tucked up asleep on the short sofa in the same position. She looked deeply asleep. While Alice slept through the afternoon, Harry tidied up around the kitchen, finding a frozen pizza in the freezer and cooking it for dinner, even though he wasn't hungry and doubted that Alice was either. When she finally awoke, she wandered into the kitchen, empty glass in her hand, and asked Harry what time it was.
Dinner time, he said. You really slept.
I dreamt I woke up and you were gone, and I started to look for you, asking everyone I knew, but everyone told me you'd never existed. And then I was asking about your father, and it turned out he never existed either.
Scary, Harry said. Are you hungry?
Maybe in a minute. I'm going to go see what's on TV. Alice turned on the television to the only channel she really watched, HGTV. A couple, a striking blonde and her dark-haired husband, were putting an offer on a California ranch house they wanted to renovate and flip. Harry brought Alice a plate with a slice of the pizza on it. Thank you, Harry. Who knew you were so handy in the kitchen?
It was frozen.
It's what your father used to make for dinner when I wasn't around.
Oh.
Harry said, wanting to apologize. Instead, he said,
So, you really think it was Annie Callahan's husband?
I know it was. I think I knew it when I first heard what happened to your father, but I didn't trust myself.
Do you think she was the only one, the only other?
She was the only one I found out about, but I don't know. I assume she was it. Your father and I had a good marriage, but I think that over time, maybe he'd fallen a little bit out of love with me. At least it felt that way. He began treating me more like a friend than a wife.
I'm sorry about that.
You don't need to be sorry about anything. It wasn't you. And if it makes you feel better, I can tell you that I think your father only ever loved one woman, and that was your mother, Harry, not me. Harry didn't say anything right away. He'd never heard Alice talk so openly before.
I think he was in love with you, he finally said. He said nice things about you.
She half smiled, and something about the expression made her look young and vulnerable. Thank you, Harry. I appreciate it. Look, I'm exhausted right now. I just want to watch some television for a while. You understand, don't you?
Of course. I'm sorry.
He got up to leave the room as Alice turned the volume up. He was returning to the kitchen when she said, You'll watch with me, won't you?
Oh, okay.
Harry got himself a beer, put a slice of the Mediterranean pizza on a plate, and returned to the living room. He almost sat in the leather recliner, but it had been his father's chair. So instead, he sat on the other side of the couch from Alice. Together, they watched the show in silence, Alice's attention not even wavering during the commercials. As soon as the show ended, another one started up instantly. Same couple, different house. Harry stood, stretched, and asked Alice if it was okay if he took a walk. Without turning away from the screen, she said, Has it stopped raining? Harry tried to remember if it had rained that day. He hadn't been out of the house.
I don't know, he said. I need a little fresh air, regardless.
Go, Harry, she said. I'll be fine. She sounded a little doubtful, though, and for a moment Harry considered just staying with Alice. He felt bad for her, and she seemed to need him. But she had the television, for now at least. And he'd be back soon, he told himself. He cleaned his plate, looking out through the window that was over the sink. The sky was filled with dusky light and towers of pink clouds. The window was cracked, and the air that was coming through it felt cool, almost cold. He went up the stairs to his room, where he changed into his best jeans and pulled a V-neck sweater over his T-shirt, then left the house, the sound of Alice's program still coming from the living room. Chapter 18. Then. When the doorbell to the condo rang, Alice thought it was probably the police. She was prepared. She would tell them how Gina had come to her door the night before, apologizing and wanting to go for a night swim in the ocean, and how Gina had seemed intoxicated. But when Alice opened the door, it was Mrs. Bergeron, Gina's mom, standing on the landing. Alice had never seen her without makeup on before, and she almost didn't recognize her. Her skin was blotchy, and she had bags under her eyes. "Is she here?" she asked Alice. "Who, Gina?" "She's missing, Alice. I went into her room this morning and she hadn't even slept there." She was stepping into the house, uninvited, and Alice suddenly panicked that Jake was about to come down the stairs naked. "She's not here, Mrs. Bergeron," she said. "But she was here last night." "She was? When?" "I don't know exactly. It was late. She knocked on the door and she seemed really drunk. She apologized about dinner and asked me if I wanted to go swimming." "Swimming?" "That's what she said. I told her I was tired and going to bed, and she left. That's all I know." "Why did she want to go swimming? It's so cold out." "I know. I thought it was strange, too, but she wasn't herself. I shouldn't have let her. I should have..." "Jesus, do you think she went swimming by herself? Stupid, stupid girl." Mrs. Bergeron's eyes were jittery. "Can I use your phone?" "Of course." Alice led her into the kitchen and to the wall-mounted phone. Mrs. Bergeron plucked the receiver up, then pulled out a card from the front pocket of her jeans, dialed a number. Alice could see that the card was from the Kennewick Police Department. "Is that Michael?" she asked, her voice panicky. Then, "I think she went swimming in the ocean last night." "Okay. Yes, okay." Alice watched the conversation from the doorway and jumped a little when she realized that Jake was standing right behind her.
"What's going on?"
he said. "Gina's missing," she said, turning. He was dressed, but he hadn't shaved yet. His dark stubble was flecked with gray.
"Since when?"
he asked. "She was here last night, after you fell asleep. She was drunk."
"Did you..."
He was interrupted by Mrs. Bergeron hanging up the phone and racing out of the kitchen. "I have to go, Alice," she said, moving toward the front door.
"Can we do anything to help?"
Jake asked, but she had already left. Alice went to shut the front door while Jake went into the kitchen. "Do you think I should help them look for her?" she asked him as he was pouring coffee into a mug.
"She'll turn up," he said. "I'm sure of it."
Later, Alice heard that they found the clothes on the beach first, then found the body later that afternoon, lodged between rocks north of Buxton Point. The police, as Alice knew they would, came to the house the following morning. Jake answered the door while Alice was cleaning up the dishes from breakfast. It was just one uniformed police officer, an Officer Wilson, who took his hat off when he entered the living room of the condo. He looked like he was in his early 20s. He had a large balding patch at the back of his head, and he had tried to make up for it by growing a wispy, blonde mustache. Alice and Jake sat across from him as he took out a notebook.
"I'm sure you know why I'm here," he said,
his eyes on Alice. "It's about Gina Bergeron."
"Right. Her mother said that she came here yesterday, and you were the one who informed her that Gina had gone swimming on Friday night."
Alice nodded.
"Can you tell me about Friday night? Do you remember what time she was here?"
Alice told the whole story, omitting the part about Gina and her mother confronting her after dinner at the Bergerons. and definitely omitting the part about biting Gina on the hand. She just said that she left their house, and then later Gina showed up, acting drunk and wanting to go swimming.
Was that unusual?
What do you mean?
Did it surprise you that Gina was drunk, or that she wanted to go swimming? Was this something she typically did?
I don't really know her that well, to tell the truth, Alice said, repeating the words that she'd said to herself in her own mind many times. We were close friends in high school, and then she went to New York City, and she changed. I didn't know her anymore.
You didn't know her anymore because you didn't see her, or because she'd changed so much?
Both, I guess. I barely had any contact with her. I saw her mother more because she comes into the pharmacy where I work, and she was the one who wanted me to come over for dinner when Gina was back in town. I didn't know why, but I think it had something to do with her being worried about Gina being on drugs, and maybe she hoped I'd be a good influence.
She said all this to you? Gina's mother?
No, it was just what I thought.
Okay. So what was she acting like when she came here?
I couldn't really understand her. She was slurring her words, and she asked me to go swimming with her, and I said that it was too late, and it was too cold, and that was it. The officer turned and looked at Jake for the first time.
Did you see Gina when she came here to the house? He asked. Oh, no. That was long after my bedtime.
He said it with a kind of faux heartiness that Alice had never heard before. He sounds like he's lying, she thought. But Officer Wilson didn't follow up. He turned back to Alice.
Did you think it was unusual that Gina wanted to go swimming? He asked.
I guess so. It was late at night.
Besides it being late at night, did it surprise you in other ways? Is this something she liked to do?
Swimming?
Yes.
I guess so. I don't really know. The officer was writing something. When he didn't immediately ask another question, Alice said, We'd gone swimming before, Gina and I. The last time that we spent together. It was nice. I think she wanted to repeat the experience as a way to get back that feeling. She said that swimming together would be like a fresh start.
She said that here, the night she came over.
Something like that.
Why did you need a fresh start?
Just like I said, we'd been close before, and now we weren't so close. We'd drifted apart.
Okay.
The officer nodded fractionally and was quiet again for a moment. Alice didn't say anything either this time.
One more thing, he said. Had Gina ever said anything to you that made you think she might be suicidal?
No, like I said, I barely even...
Not just recently, Alice, but when you knew her in high school. Or any time, really.
Oh. Alice pretended to think. There was this one time, our senior year, when we were talking about our futures, you know, where we might be in a few years, and she said something like, Alice, you'll still be here in Kennewick. You'll probably be married to some perfect man and have a baby boy and a baby girl, and I'll still be in New York, and I'll be a rich model with a major drug habit and about 16 boyfriends, and I'll be so unhappy that I'll probably kill myself. I mean, I didn't think anything of it at the time.
When did she say this?
Our senior year. I thought she was just joking.
You've been really helpful, Alice, the officer said as he stood.
Jake stood as well and walked him to the door. Alice stayed seated, but the officer turned back and thanked her before he left the condo. She felt a sudden emptiness, like she hadn't been ready for him to leave, that there was more she could have said.
What do you think that was all about?
Jake asked after shutting the door and turning back into the living room. What do you mean?
It felt like they were putting you through the third degree.
I guess so, Alice said.
If it didn't bother you, it didn't bother me. I was worried you might be upset.
I'm not upset. I'm just tired. I haven't been sleeping.
I'm sure. Go take a nap, he said, just as Alice knew he would.
She went upstairs and into her old bedroom and shut the door. It was an unspoken code that was used between her and Jake. When she went to take a nap in the bedroom they shared together, it meant that Jake would join her. When she went into her old bedroom, he wouldn't. They'd only ever had sex in that room once, right after he'd taken the pictures. In her bedroom, with the door closed, Alice took out the folder that contained all the magazine photos of Gina, the clippings she'd saved from the past few years. She spread them out on the nubby bedspread, finally arranging them in a way she liked, with her favorite picture of Gina in the middle. It was from one of her last published photo shoots, one in which she'd gotten to travel down to Miami. In the picture, she was wearing a yellow one-piece bathing suit and holding a lit cigarette. In the background was a ramshackle beach house, painted in neon colors, and a sexy man asleep in a hammock. Gina was looking directly at the camera, her face almost in a frown. Look at all I have, that face was saying. And look at how miserable I am. Alice ran her finger down the picture, as though she could feel Gina through it. The paper felt cheap. The shot was published in one of the lesser fashion magazines, a magazine that she'd had to pick up in Portland since Blevins didn't even carry it. She looked at the other pictures, then gathered them up and put them back in the folder. She stretched out on the bed and looked at the ceiling. She listened to Jake coming quietly up the stairs, then heard him turn around and go back down. He'd seen the shut door of her bedroom. Why had he been so concerned about the policeman's visit? She hadn't been bothered by it. They were just trying to decide if it had been a suicide or an accidental death. And it was going to be easy to confirm. Gina was unhappy and on drugs. Why else would she swim out into the cold ocean water? It was so sad, really, when she thought about it. All that youth being swallowed up by all that water. Poor Gina, so alone in those final moments. Alice really was a little bit sleepy, and she closed her eyes, then gently massaged her temples, hoping she wouldn't get one of her headaches. Before she fell asleep, though, Alice got up and slipped from her bedroom into the master bedroom she shared with Jake. The bed was still unmade. She pulled her clothes off and slid under the warm, familiar sheets. Maybe Jake would come up and check on her again. Chapter 19. Now. Outside, the air was crisp and smelled of loam. The pink that had just suffused the clouds was now gone, the light draining from the sky. Harry walked through the village, noticing movement behind the big window at the bookstore, the silhouetted figure of John hunched behind the checkout desk. The police would probably be questioning John as well. He'd clearly known Annie when she'd worked at the store. Had he known what was going on with the two of them? He must have had some idea. Harry almost considered popping in to see him, to ask him directly, but he wanted to see Grace first. He headed up the rise of the old post road, passing the inn, then arriving at the house where Grace had rented the room. It was mostly dark, except for some dim light in one of the second floor windows. At the front door, he rang the bell. There was a chime inside the house. He looked at the door while he waited. Ornate wooden scrollwork framed a circular piece of glass. Below it was a visible remnant of what had been a number attached to the door. 22, and two nail holes where the numbers had been affixed. Harry looked to the side of the door where 37 Prospect had been stenciled in dark red paint. Either the street number had changed or the door had been moved from another house. He pressed his finger to where the numbers on the door used to be, then pulled his finger back as the door swung inward, Grace looking a little startled, as though she was surprised to see him.
Sorry, she said. I forgot Mrs. Whitcomb isn't here, so I didn't immediately get to the door. Come on in.
Harry followed Grace as she led him up the stairs, carpeted with a threadbare oriental runner, and to her rented room. It was as large as she'd said it was, the wide double bed looking out of place against the far wall. It was as though the house had once upon a time been split into a two-family, and this had once been the upstairs living room. A couch and two wooden chairs made a semicircle around a fireplace. Grace sat on the couch, and Harry took a chair.
"What's going on?"
Grace said, pushing her hair back off her forehead. Her eyes were bright, almost jumpy. She was wearing a pair of jeans and a striped black-and-white shirt. Her feet were bare, her toenails painted green. Harry opened his mouth to speak and surprised himself by saying,
"I don't believe that you only knew my father a little."
"Uh-huh,"
she said.
I just found out that my father hadn't been faithful to his wife, and I wondered what your relationship with him was.
As Harry spoke the words, a deep flush of red spread across Grace's face.
"What do you mean you just found out?" she asked.
"I just found out that my father was having an affair with someone here in town."
She shook her head rapidly. "He wasn't."
"I think you need to tell me what's going on."
She exhaled and rubbed at an eye with the heel of her palm.
"I was involved with your father, down in New York. Who told you he was having an affair here?"
"My stepmother."
"Alice?"
"Right. She said he was involved with a married woman who worked at the store, and she thinks that the woman's husband might have had something to do with my father's death."
Grace was shaking her head again.
"Look," Harry said, "just tell me what the fuck is going on. Stop shaking your head."
Grace lifted her head and met Harry's eyes. In the lamplight of the room, her eyes looked more green than blue.
"Okay," she said, and took a breath. "You know how your father used to come down to New York all the time to visit his old store?"
"Uh-huh."
"I know Ron, the owner of the store. He owns the apartment I rent."
Harry was about to tell her he already knew that, but let it go. He wanted to hear the whole story first.
"I used to help out in the bookstore a little bit. That's how I met your dad, about 2 years ago. This was right after Hurricane Sandy and the store's basement flooded and wrecked a bunch of books. Your father came down to help out."
"Yeah, I remember,"
Harry said.
"I was helping out as well, and we spent a lot of time together. Ron was pretty useless, you know Ron, and two of the employees couldn't even get into Manhattan that week, so it was just us. And basically, I fell in love with your father."
She paused, and Harry said,
"Okay."
"I know it sounds strange."
"It's just that the age difference..."
"I can try and explain it if you like, but the truth is, I don't know if I can. I was coming off a shitty relationship with someone my age who turned out to be a worthless human being. Your father and I... It was almost instant. Like when you feel you've known someone your whole life 5 minutes after meeting them. And he was kind, as you know. But he was married, and even if he wasn't, he was nearly 25 years older than me, so it's not like I thought there was potential. But I let myself fall in love. Even became a little obsessed. I think he knew. No, I know he knew. And I think he decided not to take advantage of it. But whenever he came to the city, he'd take me out to dinner. We had a place, a Spanish restaurant, that we always went to. We'd started going there when we first met, because it was the first restaurant we'd hit when we walked out of the blacked-out portion of the city to where there was still electricity. And we kept going there. We even had our own special table, not that we always got it, but we usually did, and the owner and his wife treated us like we were a couple."
"But you weren't yet?"
Harry said.
"Well, not yet, but then we were."
"It wasn't casual, Harry. It was serious. That's why I know he wasn't having another affair. I think your stepmother made that up, that maybe she's trying to deflect the police from looking at her."
"You think she had something to do with my father's death?"
"I don't really know why I'm here, but yes, I've thought about it. Thought about Alice having something to do with your father's death. That's why I came up, I guess, and why I wanted to meet you, to find out if you knew anything.
Did you think Alice found out about you and my father?
Grace shifted forward.